Hate shopping for pants? You're not alone. Jack Archer's Jet Setter Tech Pants are basically the answer to every guy's closet struggles. With their customizable fit, wrinkle-free fabric sourced from Japan, and all-day comfort, these pants can take you from work to weekend without missing a beat. Seriously, these might be the only pants you'll ever need. Style them with the Jet Setter Tee, Legacy button-down shirt, or the buttery Legacy Polo sweater, and you've got timeless staples to meet your everyday wardrobe needs. Jack Archer is just better. For a limited time, get 15% off using the code GETJACK at jackarcher.com. Again, that's promo code GETJACK at jackarcher.com for 15% off your entire order.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Reign. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
Welcome to Rico Bronya, episode number 618. We got a lot to discuss, even if the Mets have still not made the big move we're waiting for or the big move we're dreaming of. There's a little bit of information from the last 24 hours, and we'll try to bring it all together and see how it impacts the New York Mets. Number one, the signing of Alex Bregman. Alex Bregman leaves the Boston Red Sox. He signs a five-year, $175 million deal with the Chicago Cubs. The Mets were never linked to Alex Bregman. I mean, you go back to the very beginning of this offseason, we brought his name up, we analyzed him, we talked about that as an option, but it never felt like the Mets ever considered that as an option. They were never really linked to him for the last few months. So when Bregman signed, the reaction is, where'd he go? What kind of contract did he get? How does it impact the Mets? But the player, even if you wanted him, was never somebody the Mets were attached to. I'm not surprised by the contract. I mean, when you think about what he was paid last year, when you think about Alonso getting 5 years, Schwarber getting 5 years, Bregman is a little bit older than Pete, a little bit younger than Kyle. It seems like 5 years is the sweet spot. In terms of how this impacts the Mets, I don't think it does. Like, I don't think the amount of years Alex Bregman gets impacts Kyle Tucker at all. I don't think it impacts Cody Bellinger at all. I think they're completely different. So if you see 5 years for Bregman and he's older than Tucker by a couple of years, I wouldn't just simply do the math and say, well, Kyle Tucker's going to get 8 years. It's about who's willing. That's what this is always about. It's about who's willing to give that contract. So when it comes to Kyle Tucker, here's where I think things stand. And I wanted to bring up Bregman first because I just don't think one thing has anything to do with the other. I don't think Bregman getting a five-year deal or even Pete getting a five-year deal a couple of months ago means Kyle Tucker's definitely getting a certain amount of years. Because right now it feels like the market for Kyle Tucker is around three teams. The Toronto Blue Jays, the LA Dodgers, and yes, us, the New York Mets. We're a part, I guess, of the linkage. The Toronto Blue Jays feel to be the only team that's willing to give Kyle Tucker a long-term contract. And there are now indications that he may not want to go there. Now, at the end of the day, that certainly helped the Mets last year when it came to Pete Alonso, because we had heard for so long that the Blue Jays were the one threat for Alonso and that he and his wife just didn't want to go there. Now, ultimately, we don't know what Toronto ended up ever offering. Like, did they ever exceed what he ended up getting from the Mets? Nobody knows. But there was that rumbling for a while that he didn't want to go there. And right now with Tucker, the only team who's been linked to him in terms of being willing to give him a long-term contract is the Toronto Blue Jays, and he hasn't signed it yet. So Kyle Tucker has the option of screw it, even if he doesn't want to go to Toronto. They are the defending American League champions. They are a very good team. Go there, get your years, get your money, and you're good to go for the rest of your career. But the perk of taking a short-term deal from Los Angeles or New York is a fewfold. Number one, you'll get more money on an AAV. Like logic says, if the Blue Jays are offering, let's say it's a 7-year contract or an 8-year contract at about $35 million a year, there's a really good chance that the Mets and Dodgers on a low year, high AAV number is going to come at you with 3 years, maybe 40 to 45 million per, which I'd be willing to do. I mean, I think most of us as Met fans would be okay with that. I mean, it would certainly improve this lineup. It would give them another major league outfielder, and you wouldn't have to worry about the long-term commitment. You wouldn't have to worry about the fear. I read an email, I think it was a few days ago. No, it was one of the callers we took, as Hoff pulled it off brilliantly on the last Rico Brugna, and he said, you get the vibe that maybe Kyle Tucker is Kevin McReynolds. He doesn't love baseball. He may not love New York. Well, that's the beauty of a three-year high AAV contract. Let's say he is. Let's say Kyle Tucker doesn't love baseball. Let's say Kyle Tucker does not fit in New York. If it's only a three-year contract, at least you know it's over in a couple of years. You're not locked in for a crazy amount of time. So I know I'm willing to do it. I think most Met fans are willing to do it. You would think that the Mets would be, because in this era of Steve Cohen, there's been a willingness to go high AAV, short amount of years. We've seen it. So it comes down to this with the Dodgers, the Mets, and the Blue Jays, assuming there isn't a mystery team. And I'll tell you in a few minutes why I don't buy the Yankees in this at all. If Toronto's going long-term and the Mets and the Dodgers are going short-term, the Mets just have to make sure that AAV is higher than Los Angeles. I mean, that's the key, because you're not going to beat them if the money's the same. But one of the selling points for Tucker, because I certainly understand anyone out there saying, well, why wouldn't Kyle Tucker just take the years? Like, just take the best offer you can get from Toronto, sign it, you're good to go. You don't have to worry, even if your numbers dip over the next couple of years, all the money is guaranteed. Here's why. Here's why Kyle Tucker would be smart to take a short-term, high AAV contract from either the Dodgers or the Mets. I'm not just being a fanboy and saying, take the Met offer. I get the Dodgers are a lot more appealing. And honestly, if the money's the same, you should go to LA. The lineup is better. You have a better chance to win, and you have a better chance to put yourself back in the marketplace, whether it's in a year, 2 years, or 3 years, in a better position coming off big October success with the Los Angeles Dodgers. So I am certainly not going to argue, despite being a Met fan and despite it being the Rico Brugna, that he'd be smart to take the Mets over the Dodgers. But here's why he'd be smart to take a short-term contract. I was going over this the other day in relation to us, in relation to if the Mets don't add Tucker or they don't add Bellinger or they don't add, and really that's it when it comes to the high-impact bat free agents that are remaining, what is there to look at in the market a year from now? What is there to look at in the market 2 years from now? What is there to look at the market 3 years from now? And the cold reality is that free agency, not that you have to add through free agency, but it's certainly a nice way to add talent to your roster. There is nothing position player wise coming to free agency a year from now. I would argue the best position player in free agency next year is Nico Horner. And I like Nico Horner. I'm not besmirching him, but there is no superstar big-time bat available next year. Not a one. You want to go a year from now? It's as bad. Ozzie Albies? Wilson Contreras? It's not a lot. There's a bunch of team options on Ronald Acuna Jr., and those are all going to be exercised. So if you go to a free agent website, you may see his name. He's not getting a free agency. So for the next 3 years, there are very, very few worthwhile investments when it comes to position players who are becoming free agents. That impacts the Mets in terms of what if the young position players they're developing don't develop? What if Carson Benj does not blossom the way we hope? What if Jet Williams doesn't blossom the way we hope? What if Ronnie Mauricio doesn't blossom? What if AJ Ewing doesn't blossom? Like, go up and down the list. Now, the hope is the Mets are going to develop so well that they're not going to have to dive deep in a free agency. Like, that was the hope after they signed Verlander and Scherzer. I think Steve Cohen even said it. They're investing now to win, but the hope is 3, 4, 5 years from now, they're not going to need to. Because so many young players are going to develop, they're not going to have to go out and invest in free agency. In fact, it's not ideal to invest in free agency. And I agree with that. If you have enough talent on your roster, you can use free agency to maybe hit the margins. not necessarily to build a core. But there's no guarantee these young players are going to develop. So from a Met perspective, the free agents over the next 3 years, none of which are even in the stratosphere of a player like Kyle Tucker. And trust me, Kyle Tucker is not perfect. There are concerns that come along with him. But he is a far, far better player than anybody who gets to free agency in the next 3 years, which is a reason in itself for why the Mets should be aggressive. But it's also a reason in itself for why Kyle Tucker should take a short-term contract. Because even though as you get older, your value takes a little bit of a hit, but what also helps your value is who you're competing with in free agency. Right now, Kyle Tucker is 28 years old. He's going to be 29 in less than a week, which means for intents and purposes, I mean, it really is. This is his age 29 season. Next year's his age 30 season. I get it. The year after age 31, we all know how to count. But considering the lack of impact bats that are going to hit free agency over the next 2 or 3 years, I think off of a good year, a really good year, dare I say a great year if he has it, combined with the fact that there's no one else for desperate teams to go after, Kyle Tucker is better off going into free agency even if he's 31 years old. Because you compete with the other guys who are available. Kyle Schwarber was his competition. Pete Alonso, in a way, was his competition. Alex Bregman was his competition. Even if those contracts don't relate to each other, if there was no Pete Alonso, if there was no Kyle Schwarber, would the Baltimore Orioles have been more aggressive for Kyle Tucker? Maybe. If they needed a bat and they wanted to add an impact bat and those guys weren't walking through that door, yeah, they'd be more suitors for Kyle Tucker. So by using that logic, it makes sense for him if he's not getting the mega contract he wants, and at least in the place that he wants. Because again, if he doesn't want to go to Toronto, which is now the rumblings, you can kick this can down the road. And kicking the can down the road benefits us as Met fans, and I think it absolutely benefits Kyle Tucker. And here's the reality. It benefits us as Met fans. If Kyle Tucker signs a short-term high AAV contract, and I'm wrong, I take one of my biggest but pleasantful L's I could ever take, and that's Kyle Tucker as a New York Met. Well, the odds are he's only going to be a Met for a couple of years. Everything I'm describing paints him as he's here for a year, two, or three, depending on the kind of contract he wants to sign. He re-enters free agency, in which everyone's falling all over themselves because there were no other impact bats, and then he gets some kind of mega contract the Mets aren't willing to pay. And I'm fine with that. And I'd be fine with that depending on the development of the young players that they have. The beauty of Tucker on a short-term deal, and I don't want to compare it to Scherzer and Verlander, even though I brought their names up earlier, but they are a bridge. Kyle Tucker, in a weird way, despite being only 29 years old, could be a bridge to finding out about your young position players.
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Getting the best you can out of him over the next 2 or 3 seasons, because he's going to want that mega contract. And then if he does that for you and helps you win, great. If your young players develop great, you wave them goodbye. And so I hold out hope that David Stearns realizes this, that Kyle Tucker and his agent realize this. And then the hard part, because maybe the easy part is selling Kyle Tucker and his representation on why short-term makes sense, why you should take a 2 or 3 year deal with opt-outs all over the place with a huge AAV. That may be the easy part. The hard part may be defeating the Los Angeles Dodgers. And I guess that's why, despite me making the case for why this makes so much sense for the Mets, and it does, their competition is fierce. Like, the Los Angeles Dodgers
are going to offer him a high AAV, heavily deferred, short-term contract. Remember early on in the Juan Soto sweepstakes, obviously the Mets were linked, the Red Sox were linked, the Yankees were linked, you know, your usual customers. The Dodgers were linked, but apparently they were trying to get him on a short-term, huge AAV, opt-out laden kind of contract. And the Dodgers have that ability to do that. And the Dodgers have that ability to even say, even if it's not as much money as the Mets, come here because we're a lock for the postseason. We have an incredible lineup. Imagine where we would put you between Shohei and Mookie and Freddie Freeman. So it is not going to be easy to beat the Los Angeles Dodgers in this. Now, let me get to Cody Bellinger, because the latest on Cody Bellinger came from Brian Hoke, who does a great job covering the New York Yankees, in which he said that the Yankees are now under the impression that Cody Bellinger is going to sign elsewhere. Met fans, Ricoers, put your arm around your Yankee fan friend, because you can politely tell them, we heard the exact same leak. This is right out of last year between Pete Alonso and the New York Mets. Remember that whole thing? It felt like Pete was negotiating, or at least trying to get the Mets to negotiate against themselves, much like Cody and Scott Boras, are trying to get the Yankees to negotiate against themselves. After a long standoff, the Yankees, much like the Mets last year, say, all right, F it. Screw it. This is exhausting. In the Mets' case, it was after they signed Jesse Winker, and the report got leaked to Andy Martino. The Mets are now under the impression Pete Alonso is going to sign elsewhere, that he's gone unless he comes crawling back. And ultimately, did he come crawling back? Yeah, but Pete did pretty well in his short-term contract. So the same thing is clearly going on right now between Cody Bellinger and the New York Yankees. It may be mildly surprising to say this because of the Dodgers and Toronto and the Mets, but right now there is not a robust market for Cody Bellinger. There isn't. There are teams that are interested. We keep hearing the Mets are interested, and we know why. He makes sense for the team. He makes sense for LA. He makes sense for San Francisco. But have we heard of any offer to Cody Bellinger from a team not named the New York Yankees? We haven't. I haven't heard an offer from the Mets. We have no idea what the Mets are offering. We have no idea if the Mets have even made an offer. And considering the Mets are known to not make offers, as we heard with Pete Alonso, amongst others, who was the other one? I think Robert Suarez was the other reliever when he signed with Atlanta. It came out, Mets didn't make an offer. So there's a really good chance the Mets have never made an offer. There's a really good chance the Dodgers are just waiting there on the sidelines. And so this is the New York Yankees negotiating with Cody Bellinger. No one else negotiating with Cody Bellinger. Scott Boras insisting on 7 years at $35 million a year, which, I'm sorry, I have said this numerous times. I did this on The Fan at the beginning of the offseason in a Yankee discussion. I've said it here on the Rico. Kyle Tucker is better than Cody Bellinger by like a good amount. The benefit of Bellinger is twofold, which I admit, his versatility, and he has now shown he can play in New York. 1,000%. And I don't dismiss that at all. The versatility of being able to play first base, which benefits the Mets and could benefit the Yankees. Ben Rice is certainly no sure thing. And the fact that he came here in New York in a contract year and had a big year. We don't know if Kyle Tucker can do that. But the numbers are the numbers. I don't even know how anyone could debate it. Like, Kyle Tucker's a better player. And here's Cody Bellinger and Scott Boras sitting back demanding $35 million a year on a 7-year deal. I mean, God bless you. You could demand whatever you want. But the Yankees leaking out to Brian Hoke, we expect him to sign elsewhere. I don't think they expect him to sign elsewhere. They're telling Scott Boras, you are not getting that offer from us. So if you're not signing until you get that offer, I don't know if you'll ever sign, but you're not signing with us. Now, what does this have to do with the Mets, other than us just putting our arm around Yankee fans and saying this sounds familiar? Here's what it has to do with us. We're not signing Cody Bellinger unless, and this is the caveat, the New York Yankees legitimately pivot. I don't think they will. I think they should, but that's a different discussion. If the Yankees actually pivot and actually say, you know what, we're moving on, let's go get Bo Bichette. If they sign Bo Bichette, I don't think Hal Steinbrenner's got the stomach to sign Bichette and Bellinger as much as Yankee fans would love that. And so I think that could leave Cody Bellinger screwed. It could leave Cody Bellinger in a spot in which the one team that was aggressively going after him is no longer going after him at all. And that could open up the Mets, the Dodgers, the Blue Jays, whoever misses out on Kyle Tucker, to try to get him on a short-term high AAV contract, kind of like what he just had. Now, Cody Bellinger is not considering that right now, but I think what David Stearns may be doing, and I find it highly doubtful that it will work out to his favor, is let the Yankees move on. If the Yankees move on from Cody Bellinger, and now he no longer has a legitimate home, we swoop in. I do not find that likely. I think what's going on right now between Bellinger, Boris, and the Yankees is a typical middle of January standoff in negotiations. That's what I think is going on. So where does this leave all of us? I still think, unfortunately, it is going to leave us without one of those big bats and piecing together the rest of this offseason and piecing together the rest of this outfield. I am holding out hope. I am keeping my fingers crossed that I am going to take a massive L on this Kyle Tucker thing, and the Mets are able to swoop in and get him on a short-term high AAV contract. And the hope is he's going to realize, just like I realize and you should realize, the free agent market over the next 3 years is the Sahara Desert. And it will benefit Tucker to re-enter free agency in a year or two. Now, Hoff, with all of that said, the Bellinger stuff, the Tucker stuff, the Bregman stuff, do you have any level of confidence that this could somehow work out in our favor, whether it's the Yankees moving on from Bellinger and him having to settle, or even the Mets outbidding the Dodgers on a short-term IAAV contract for Kyle Tucker?
I got to be honest, I don't. I don't have any belief that David Stearns is really going to do that. Like, I like it too, especially the short-term Kyle Tucker, but like you said, the draft pick's going to be pumped in, attached to that, and I know David Stearns doesn't want to do that. So, again, I still feel that that's highly unlikely that David Stearns will go that route. The Cody Bellinger thing, I think, is closer to it if there's one of the two. But I think they're more willing to go trade market. I think that's what they're going to look for to fill out the outfield or fill out some this lineup.
The other obvious thing they have to add is in the rotation, a couple of pieces of information over the last few days, which is interesting to digest. Number one, the ask for Edward Cabrera, who obviously was traded last week to the Chicago Cubs. When he was traded to Chicago, you looked at what the Cubs gave up and tried to make assumptions of what would be an equivalent package from the Mets. Well, it was reported earlier this week that the ask that came from Miami featured Brett Beatty as being one of the pieces, and then a high-end pitching prospect as well. Actually, I think it was Brett Beatty and A.J. Ewing were the two pieces, so it wasn't a pitching prospect. It was Beatty and Ewing as the package back for Edward Cabrera. I would not have made that trade. So I am glad the Mets said no. Cabrera is a high upside possibility, but he isn't a sure thing. I talk about that's what the Mets need to add to the rotation. So trading away a top outfield prospect along with a starting third baseman, which is what Brett Beatty is, to me, I'm glad they didn't make that trade. That is too high of an ask for someone who is still trying to prove himself in Edward Cabrera.
The A.J. Ewing part, though, to me, had no ill on this that trade whatsoever. Like, if it was Edward Cabrera for A.J. Ewing and somebody else, I think I would have been okay with that move.
Keep an eye on A.J. Ewing. He's a fast riser. He got all the way up to Double-A last year. He plays second base, shortstop, but mostly center field. He can steal bases. He hits for a pretty high average. He's an interesting piece. Now, that doesn't mean I wouldn't trade him, obviously. I think that most prospects in this system and the right deal, I would move. I just wouldn't do it for someone like Cabrera, who, while he's intoxicating because he throws 96 and he's got great stuff, he always has injuries. He has a tough time staying healthy. He's got command issues. He just hasn't put it all together. And maybe he does for Chicago. If he does, I guess we could look back at this and regret what the Mets didn't give up. But to me, that's too high of an ask. Like, If I'm trading young pieces for a starting pitcher, I'm doing it for a sure thing. The other guy is Freddy Peralta. We've heard a lot about, and we're starting to hear specifics on what it would take to get him. Probably Brandon Sproat or Jonah Tong. I hesitate. And I guess I follow this with a question for David Stearns. It's rhetorical because he won't answer it. In fact, David hasn't met the media since Pete Alonso left, so we haven't heard from him in a very long time. I would do it if you're serious about keeping Freddy Peralta past this season. If you look at Freddy, who is right now 29, but he's turning 30 in the middle of June, he is the closest I wouldn't call him an ace, but I think he's close to an ace. I mean, last year he pitched like one. You pitched to a 2.7 ERA. You pitched to a 5.5 WAR. You make every start. Like, he was close to an ace-like pitcher. I think he's like almost there. But if you're going to trade for him and you're going to give up important capital like a Brandon Sproat or a Jonah Tong on a guy who has 1 year left on his deal, I'm okay as long as you're going to make a real effort to keep him at the end of the season. If you are, then I think it's worth it, because I think we'd all be thrilled if Tong or Sproat turned into 70% of what Freddy Peralta is. But I need like a legitimate, we're going to try to keep him if you're going to trade for him. Otherwise, I don't think the team is good enough. Like, we're not a player away. I know it's baseball, anything can happen, but I would almost, like, if you sign Kyle Tucker, put it this way, if you got Tucker on a short-term, high AAV contract, I'd probably be more willing to do that kind of rental deal, because I'd feel like, hey, I got a shot. Why the hell not? But if you're going to put out a lineup that's going to feature two-thirds of your outfields being major, major questions, you don't have a real first baseman, you don't have a legitimate DH, if you're going to go into the start of the season with all those holes, I don't think it makes any sense to trade one of your top pitching prospects for a rental starting pitcher.
I agree. That's the same thing I say about Tarik Skubal as well. Like, yeah, give up five guys for Skubal if you can commit to locking him up for a long-term contract. Otherwise, I wouldn't go for him right now. Wait for him to hit free agency. I think it's just stupid to go and give up the form for a guy who's not going to stick around.
Unless you want him to stick around. I remember saying this a year ago about Dylan Cease, because we spent a lot of time when there were rumors and rumblings that San Diego was going to move him. And yeah, Cease would have been great for the rotation. And I thought going into last year, the Mets were obviously closer to winning. We had higher hopes on winning coming off of the OMG season, adding Juan Soto, even keeping Pete Alonso. So there was more of a reason to do a rental last year for Dylan Cease. But I had that same attitude, which is, if you're going to give up a lot, just tell me you're interested in keeping him long-term. And Freddy Peralta, by the way, is a guy who obviously David Stearns is familiar with his time in Milwaukee, but I probably would be willing to go to a 5 or 6 year contract. Problem is, if he gets to free agency and he comes off a big year with the Mets, he could get 7 or 8 years, depending on how well he pitches. And I doubt that you trade for him and you work out an extension prior. So it's tough. It's tough. It's tough trading for starting pitchers who are free agents in a year when you've got a team president / general manager who hasn't shown a great willingness to go long-term on starters.
Looking to create the bath you've always dreamed of without all the hassle? The Home Depot makes it easier. Shop fully styled rooms and curated collections to bring your vision to life. Use digital tools to preview flooring and finishes in your space and get everything you need from tubs to tile delivered fast and priced right. The Home Depot. Dream baths built here.
In fact, I was thinking about it the other day, outside of Soto, who clearly they went long-term for. What is the longest term deals Stearns has given out so far as the general manager team president of the New York Mets? I mean, 3 years? I'm trying to think. Like, yeah, he inherited a lot of long-term contracts, obviously, which he's moved on from, like Brandon Nimmo. But what's the longest contract he's given out this side of Juan Soto? I think the answer is 3 years, right?
Right, yeah. Like Sean Manaea, he brought back Sean Manaea, and it was a 3-year contract. That's it. I mean, Jorge Polanco, 2-year deal. Marcus Semien, I know, acquired, there's a 3-year deal left on the contract. But, like, nobody else. Relievers, you know, Devin Williams, a 3-year deal. Luke Weaver, I believe, is 2-year deal. Yeah, that's it.
So we haven't seen that yet. I mean, it doesn't mean he can't do it, but we haven't seen it yet. We haven't seen him go out and do it. Yeah, 3 years is the most. I'm going through all the contracts he's given out. Now, if you go to Milwaukee, and I know we don't want to do it because he's the president of the Mets. Who cares about what he did in Milwaukee? But he did give out some long-term contracts in Milwaukee. He gave out a 5-year, $80 million deal to Lorenzo Cain. Oof. How about that? That didn't work out well. He signed Christian Yelich to a 13-year, $215 million contract.
I would say that worked out.
The beginning of it worked out.
Yeah.
I mean, now he's a walking back injury.
I mean, that's usually what happens at the end of these long-term contracts. We know this.
But that is the longest contract he has given out with the Mets is 3 years. 3 years to Manaea, but besides Soto, obviously. I don't want to just ignore that, but I think Juan Soto is that generational example. And we talked about Yamamoto. There was a willingness to go that far with Yoshinobu Yamamoto. That's why those are the only two guys we've seen that for, which is why if you trade for Freddie Peralta, I've got no reason to believe that David Stearns is going to be willing to go to 5 or 6 years, excuse me, which is what it would take to keep him. I mean, he's a top-line starting pitcher. So I don't love trading Sproat or Tong for someone who's likely to be gone in one season. The other name brought up recently, I think it was Pat Ragazzo who had this report, that the Mets and the Nationals have talked about Mackenzie Gore. It's not Mike Rizzo anymore, so I shouldn't stereotype what the Nationals may do because it's different management. But Mike Rizzo never seemed to want to ever make a trade with the New York Mets for someone significant. I remember years ago when they were trading Scherzer and they were trading Trey Turner, they never were open to making a deal with the Mets. I don't know if the Nationals would still feel that way under new management. Mackenzie Gore is signed for a few more years. He's young, too. He's only 27 years old. And what I like about Gore is that he takes the ball every 5 days. If you look at the last 3 years since he was traded for Soto and went to Washington, he's been very sturdy. He hasn't developed, though, maybe that ace-like pitcher. I think last year he got off to a great start and then completely crumbled. So I wouldn't be against trading for Mackenzie Gore, but what I'm worried about is the asking price in this trade market for starting pitchers. It's through the roof. I mean, it is so damn expensive. You see what Edward Cabrera cost. And I'm not going that far. I'm not willing to do that. And a part of why I'm not willing to do it is because of what they're not doing to add to this offense. And because, as I mentioned earlier in this pod, and I think this is very relevant, not just trying to convince Kyle Tucker to take a short-term deal, there are not a lot of appealing position player free agents next year, the year after that. You got to go all the way, I'm not even joking, till 2030 to start to find like game-changing appealing free agents. Like Ellie De La Cruz. And if the Reds were smart, they'd lock him up. And I'm sure they're trying. So because of that, because of the fact that it's not like you could look towards next year or the year after when it comes to position players, it's very important that you develop your own. So Brett Beatty, and I'm not against trading Brett Beatty, but now with Alex Bregman off the market, with Okamoto off the market, you trade Brett Beatty in a deal for Edward Cabrera, how are you replacing him? Unless you have a level of confidence in Ronnie Mauricio or you have internal confidence in guys replacing him, you're creating a new hole for your offense. And this is already an offense that has a lot of holes all over the place, which is why adding somebody who brings a level of certainty like Kyle Tucker would be such a great move. It really would. I don't know if it would erase the negativity of losing a Pete Alonso, but in terms of making the team better, it'd make the team significantly better. And speaking of Pete Alonso, I want to read this email from Justin. Justin writes, big fan of the Rico. You recently said something about Alonso on Evan and Tiki about the Mets losing Alonso and why in baseball it always stings and how it's something that has to be explained to kids who are learning to lose their favorite players. However, I think there's an element you might be missing with Alonso. For Met fans who are my age, 2 years ago I was 20 and got an answer to my voicemail on the Rico, and now I'm preparing to finish grad school to become a social studies teacher. Time flies. Congratulations, my man. I think we should bring back the voicemail, by the way. I was thinking about that the other day, too. We had Hoff connect us to taking phone calls, which we will now add to the Rico on Friday nights, Saturday mornings. So we'll bring back the voicemail. I just got to remember what the number is and the way to log into it. But let me continue on with Justin's email. We don't have the experience, because remember, he's 22 years old, Justin. We don't have the experience of losing our guy. As a 22-year-old, I remember losing David Wright the most, but he retired and was a Met for life. The only thing I have and can truly relate to losing Alonso is DeGrom leaving. Maybe I'm crazy and missing someone, or I'm too young to remember other big-time Met players, but I feel as if I don't have the experience of losing a beloved Met. This loss hurts so much, and I just wanted to know what you think. Well, what I think is it sucks and it never gets easier. What I had said on the air is that as a Met fan, and even as a Net fan and a Jet fan, I have become used to it. It still stings. It still sucks. It still bothers you. But whether it was the decision to trade Darrell Revis, which I was deeply against, whether it was losing Jose Reyes years ago, or losing Zach Wheeler, or in the case of DeGrom and Alonso, or it's certainly not the same, but falling in love with Kevin Durant and then he demands a trade and he's gone, it does become a part of sports where you just get used to losing your guys. It doesn't make it easier, but it's just a part of the game. And I read that email because even though I think Tucker would be a great addition for this team, and as a baseball player is overall a better player than Pete Alonso, I don't know if it would take away the sting that a lot of people still have, including our last emailer, Justin. What I'm trying to do, and I don't know how successful I am, but what I'm trying to do is move on from all that and just think about the team. Because at the end of the day, when we get to opening day or get to spring training, which is literally a month away, you want to have a belief that your team can win a championship. And if the Mets win a world championship, I can promise you this, all the sting is gone. And I don't say that from experience. I say that from the fact I have no experience. The fact that I am a 42-year-old man who's never seen the Mets win a world championship. I would tell you that if they win a World Series this year in stunning fashion, without Alonso, without Diaz, and without Nimmo, I think we'll all be fine. I think we'll all move on very, very quickly. So it's about building a team. And right now there are holes all over the place, and adding another certainty to this lineup would be so important. David writes, Evan, have you been to an all-star game or a home run derby? Which was better, and what was your experience like? I have been to one home run derby. It was the one at Citi Field. It was the one won by Yoenis Cespedes. And I went to two All-Star games. I went to the All-Star game back in 1996 at Veterans Stadium in Philadelphia. Mike Piazza hit a home run. He was not a Met at the time. He was a Dodger All-Star. And then the All-Star game at Citi Field that Matt Harvey started, drilled Robinson Cano in the first inning. What it was my experience like? You know what I'll never forget about the home run derby, and I'm pretty sure a few people in the audience who went will remember this. It was a very hot night. It was like 98 degrees hot. So it was a hot, uncomfortable night. It was a fun show. Cespedes is hitting bombs all over the place. And then afterwards, the 7 train was down. It was not running. That day, I didn't drive to Citi Field. I figured the parking would be crazy. At the time, I lived in Queens in Long Island City. Not walking distance from Citi Field, but, you know, a nice, easy train ride. Get on the 7, take it down to Vernon Jackson. That was the subway stop. So nice, easy, 18-minute subway ride, but the trains weren't working. And me and my dad thought we were going to pass out. It was like 100 degrees outside. We could not find a subway, and we could not find a taxi. And at this point, I don't know if Ubers existed or if I just didn't know how to find an Uber. This was 2013, was the year of the All-Star game, 2013. And so my dad and I just started walking towards Long Island City. We were never going to be able to make it home, but we just, what else were we going to do? Can't get a taxi. There's no 7 train. It's 100 degrees outside. We just start walking. We finally get a taxi, and the taxi refused to take us to Queens. We were in Queens, but to that part of Queens, said, nope, not doing it. Just drove away, which I later found out is against the law, but whatever. So when you ask me, David, what's your memory of the All-Star game? My memory of the All-Star game is my dad and I walking 10 miles in 105-degree weather, just trying to get back. That was it. But thank you very much for the email. I hope they bring back the All-Star game. Now that years have gone by and it's been over a decade and you're starting to see All-Star games be repeated in the same ballparks, why not bring it back to New York? I guess it would go to Yankee Stadium first because the old Yankee Stadium had the All-Star game, but the new Yankee Stadium has not had it. They had the old stadium had it in its final year in 2008. That was the year Josh Hamilton had the great home run derby and the game went extra innings, if memory serves correct. A couple of other things around Metland. Number one, Luis Angel Acuña hit a 4-home-run game the other day. Does that change what we think of him? No, but it's nice that he did it. I mean, congratulations to Luis Angel Acuña. I think Luis Angel Acuña has a great value for this team as a super utility player, as a speedster off the bench, as a guy who plays really good defense at second, which I know may not be it may be minimized this season because of the addition of Marcus Semien. But nevertheless, we know he can do it. We know he can play third base, even though he's not the biggest guy in the world. Every time he's gone over there, he's looked halfway decent. And late in the season, we saw him play a little bit of center field. And when you look at the makeup of this roster and you try to find at-bats for him, because I expect he'll be on the team to start the year. I don't know how much value he has in the trade market. And who knows what kind of trade the Mets are going to make if they're going to make any. I mean, we're a month away from spring training, and while we've heard a lot of rumors, nothing's gone down. I really like Acuña's role as that super utility player, especially in a world now where we have the Manfred man at second base. Because I think then, you know, having that specialty pinch runner is really, really important. But good for him. The fact he had a 4-home-run game. Good for him. You want to contact the Rico, you can always email us, thericob@gmail.com, thericob@gmail.com. We will continue to incorporate some phone calls on our mailbag edition of the Rico, which is usually on Friday night. And coming up very shortly on the Rico Bronya, especially if there's no breaking Met news, we now have closure on the Edwin Diaz trade. The Edwin Diaz trade can officially be closed now that he's no longer a Met. We are going to really break down that trade and see where it ranks in the history of the New York Mets. The Mets have made some great trades in their history, some of which are still out there, like the Lindor trade. It can only get better and better as he remains on this team. I guess it could get worse, but not really. But with the end of the Diaz trade, where does it fall in Met history? We're going to do a deep dive on that coming up on a future Rico Bronya. We do appreciate you listening and downloading. Remember, coming up shortly, we'll also be doing a Rico Rewatchable on the return of baseball to New York post September 11th. So if you have time between NFL playoff games, check that out on YouTube. And coming up first week of February, we'll have an in-depth episode talking about that game. Thank you very much for listening, downloading, subscribing, and hanging out with us on another edition of Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.